Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Dr. Michael Colgan as my special expert guest. Dr. Colgan is one of the world's most popular scientific experts in nutrition. He is a best-selling author and travels the world lecturing on topics related to anti-aging, sports nutrition, human performance, and hormonal health. Dr. Colgan has a distinguished reputation for expertise in sports nutrition science and functional fitness, and is an advisor to hundreds of elite athletes. His many books include Prevent Cancer Now, Optimum Sports Nutrition, The New Nutrition, Hormonal Health, Your Personal Vitamin Profile, The New Power Program, and The Sports Nutrition Guide. Dr. Colgan was the first recipient of the CHFA Sports Nutrition Hall of Fame Award, and his texts and research are utilized extensively in the Certified Sports Nutrition Advisor Education Program. Good morning, Michael, and it's a wonderful, great pleasure to have you as my special expert guest on this edition of SNU.
Good morning, Corey. Seems to be a long time since we last spoke.
And it's about time that we had you on the show to give us an update. I mean, people have been asking me, what is Michael doing over there on Salt Spring Island? And I know you've been very busy, so maybe you can give us a short update on what's keeping you busy over there.
Oh, yes. Well, we've acquired an 80-acre property on St. Mary's Lake, and I've been developing it over the last year. In fact, we've put up 28 buildings in that time. Developed a gym here, a yoga room, an indoor and outdoor riding rings of Olympic quality, and we have something a region of 50 horses here at the moment as well. It's an effort to make this a destination resort.
A destination resort for people who have an interest in horses, but not just horses. Your camp is offered each year, the Power Program Camp, so you're going to be hosting possibly even more people now?
Oh, I think so, yes. And we will have permanent members of our gym that will be using it every day now, as well as during seminars and things.
Oh, so you're going to offer the gym services to the local residents of the island?
Yes. That's right, and we also have built a specific yoga room for my stretching program. The new stretching program is very extensive, makes a lot of use of yoga. I mean, you're using the Iyengar system, essentially with the whole wall, the wall hangs, and various pieces of apparatus.
So now the next Power Program Camp is coming this July.
That's right.
And do you have any special events that we can look forward to?
Well, special in that we will have a kayaking on the lake. The fishing is great. So the recreational aspect of it is really good. But from the point of view of the Power Program, we've carried on the development of it into the fourth year. So we're getting more advanced. But I think the best addition to it is the greater emphasis that I put on flexibility. Flexibility is one way of rapidly increasing your strength because of the energy that you can store in the muscles and use in the stretch reflex. The majority of people who use weights and short movements fail to develop the muscles in that way. Consequently, they do not have much spring in the muscle.
So why is there such an emphasis on flexibility? How important is that to athletic performance, Michael?
Well, it's because it allows your body to use the stretch reflex. And if you want an example of the body using the stretch reflex and storing energy, think of an antelope jumping. When they hit the ground, they've got so much stored energy in the legs that they bounce right off it. That's the difference between them and, say, an elephant. An elephant has got much more strength, but it's brute strength, dead weight, quite slow, and not the sort of strength you want for athletic performance.
So would this also be valuable, say, to prevent injuries?
the other thing is, of course, it exercises the soft tissues at their maximum extension and rotation, which generally is missed in the gym. When people work out with weights, they do not follow the pattern of the design of the body. They do artificial movements, often restricted or held together by a bar or held in place by machines or straps that are not the movements that you make during athletic endeavors and not the movements you make during life.
Isn't it also true that gravity works in a straight line and a lot of human function works in a rotary-like activity?
Yes, almost all human movement is rotational. It's designed to be that way. And the example I always give is the bicep complex. The bicep not only bends the arm, but supinates the palm. So your palm goes from hanging down at your side, and the normal movement of the bicep, because of its attachment to the tibia, is to twist the palm upwards.
So we need to respect how the body works anatomically and physiologically, and then design our workout program to conform to that and not the other way around.
Right. I get so many athletes who come to me and they're frustrated in that they can do repeated curls with, let's say, a 135-pound bar in the gym, but their movements in their sport are not particularly strong, even using the same muscles. And that's because when you do a movement with a 135-pound bar with a bicep curls, your hands are locked together by the bar. They're doing an artificial movement in which the bicep complex cannot operate properly because the palms can't supinate and pronate. And consequently, when they try to use the same sort of movement in their sport, their arms are weak.
Now, isn't it also true that flexibility is connected to youthful aging or has maybe an anti-aging effect?
I think that's best illustrated, Corey, by the young man who walks with a spring in his step and the old man who shuffles. The young man has still got the double spring in his spine. That is, the spine flexes, extends downwards and upwards as he walks. Whereas the old man, the spine is compressed, especially in the lumbar region, and there's no spring. Therefore, it's very difficult for him to walk without shuffling.
That's a great analogy. And these analogies that you just pull out of your hat, Michael, are always so useful to get the message across. It's almost like a parable from the past. Now, in reading your last newsletter, which you do put out every couple of months, for those of our listeners who don't know, they can subscribe to this and get some great information and insight direct from Michael and Leslie. You talked about diabetes. Yes. The feature article was titled Insulin, Diabetes, and Degeneration. One thing that stood out was the term insulin myth. Maybe you could help convey to us what you mean by insulin myth.
Yes. Because the number of cases of adult onset diabetes is now epidemic, between 10 and 20 million Americans and approximately 2.5 million Canadians, the old myths about diabetes are always surfacing, and one of them is that the body loses its ability to produce insulin. That's the hormone made by the pancreas that regulates its use of sugar. Some unfortunate people, very, very small percentage, do have that problem. But most adult-onset diabetics produce just as much insulin, just as rapidly as non-diabetics. And the pre-diabetic condition that we are concerned with when we're looking at people falling into adult-onset diabetes shows high blood insulin, not low, high. The pancreas is working overtime. The ability to produce insulin is normal, but for a number of reasons, it fails to control blood sugar. And that's a condition called insulin resistance.
Now, that term really takes people off their guard. I get asked this all the time. What does that mean, insulin resistance, or maybe a lack of insulin sensitivity? Because they're sort of somehow related, aren't they?
Yes. The cells that recognize the sugar in the blood and that have receptors for it and enable insulin to react with them become less sensitive. So sugar and insulin continue to circulate in the bloodstream, but they ignore each other. So the sugar level rises until the blood can no longer contain it, which causes a spillover into the urine that used to be the hallmark of diabetes and still is. If your fasting blood sugar is over 110, you're headed towards diabetes.
Now, if we've got high levels of insulin roaming about in the blood, I think the term is hyperinsulin anemia.
Yes.
How does one reach that state? How is that caused? What does a human being have to do to be in that state?
Well, it's a lot to do with what you eat. I mean, one of the worst things that has changed in our diet over the last 50 years or so, that has precipitated epidemic proportions of adult onset diabetes, is the use of saturated fats and trans fats. I read a newspaper report yesterday, and I don't know how much you can trust newspaper reports, but it said that fast foods in America are higher fat than ever. A lot of fast food companies have changed to using vegetable oils as if it made any difference. Unfortunately, once you fry the vegetable oil, once you heat it up, its unsaturated nature changes to saturated. It becomes a trans fat, which is even worse for you than animal fat. So all these vegetable cooked chips and bits and sticks and junk food are actually worse for us now that people have switched to vegetable oil than they were when they left it alone.
Now, I see that kind of food all the time, Michael, on the shelves, predominating the shelf space. And now I see there's a little insignia on the cover. It says zero trans fats. But I look at the food and I know it's junk. So why would that still be junky if it's got no trans fats in it?
Well, you can remove some of the trans fats. I don't believe in when it says no trans fats. I think you can remove some of them. But the fats that they replace them with are not much better. And the reason that they're making those claims is that those particular fats, because they have to replace them with something, those particular fats have not been investigated yet for their cardiovascular effects and for their effects on diabetes, etc. Fats can be made in many, many types.
So we still have to be conscious of quality food, whole food, and what that means.
Yes, I guess. There's no way around it.
Now, what is the connection between obesity and excess fat and diabetes?
Oh, that's a tough one because there are communities in the world that eat high saturated fats diets that have very low diabetes. But we know that if those people from those communities adopt the Western diet, then they quickly change to show rising blood fats, disturbances of carbohydrate metabolism at exactly the same rate as the local population. So it's a lot to do with our diet. I think, and I know you are a fan of this too, Corey, that the amount of processed carbohydrate we put into the diet is a killer. Even if we avoid dietary saturated and trans fats, it's only one step. Avoiding processed carbohydrate is equally important. But there is another whole problem, and that is once you start to get fat, then your body starts to change. Once you start to get fat, you also develop a higher level of cholesterol and triglycerides. An increase in body fat causes the body to make more of an enzyme called aromatase, which converts testosterone into estrogen, which increases the deposit of body fat, and this especially happens in men. Another hormone called leptin loses its ability to control body fat, and insulin loses its ability to control sugar. So there is a roller coaster, vicious cycle of gaining body fat and all that goes with it. And it's now called the chaos complex. Coronary heart disease, hypertension, adult onset diabetes, obesity, and stroke. In the last few years, Alzheimer's disease has been added to that list. So it's a pretty dismal picture if you eat the modern diet.
So what I'm hearing is if you eat fresh harpooned raw walrus and get fat from that, that's different from a drive-thru.
Very different, yes.
So it's the composition of the fat. It's what the fat was made from.
Composition of the fat and its combination with processed carbohydrate.
And we do know that you can be fit and fat, and that you can also be lean and not fit, and that there's certain advantages to having strong musculature under an excess layer of fat, isn't there?
Well, of course there is, because muscle is the engine in which the body fat is burned. I mean, that's an old saying, but it's partially true. If you have a lot of muscle to support, then you burn a lot more. And if you have a lot of muscle support, then you do a lot more exercise, because otherwise you wouldn't have the muscle to support.
Now, what relationship does the intake of vitamins and minerals have with diabetes? Is there a relationship?
Oh, yes. I mean, there are a lot of things that can help to control insulin metabolism. And the major problem as we get past 40 years of age, that your insulin metabolism declines anyway. Just like 1,000 systems in your body, they all go down. And there are certain things that help to preserve insulin metabolism. One of them is R-plus lipoic acid. And we use that all the time. That's not the alpha lipoic acid still sold in most stores. It's the R isomer of alpha lipoic acid, the way it occurs in nature. And then there is, of course, docosahexaenoic acid. Docosahexaenoic acid is one of the unsaturated omega-3 fats that we get from things like salmon and other cold water, deep water fish. That also supports insulin metabolism. Let's see, there is, of course, one of the things that's chronically short in the Canadian diet is chromium. And we use chromium in an easily absorbed form of picolinate to improve insulin metabolism.
On the picolinate, Michael, there's been ups and downs, series of criticisms, people coming out with condemnation, then it changes. What's the position now? What's the latest data on the picolinate? Has it been vindicated?
Like every other substance, first of all, because it is a patented substance, therefore, you have to pay a royalty on it. And, of course, everyone would like to have forms of chromium that they don't pay a royalty on, that they develop themselves. Consequently, it comes in for a pretty large chunk of criticism. But amongst research biochemists, amongst many of my colleagues, chromium picolinate is still the most effective form of chromium. I mean, if you want, for many of the ones that are supposedly out there that are better, you might as well go back to the old chromium chloride, which used to be used in the past. It's true, every substance has criticisms of it, and studies that come out one way or the other. I mean, it is in the nature of science that, let me put it another way. People think that science is definite. So you hear the newsreader say, a study has just shown that, da-da-da-da-da. But if you're a scientist like me, you say, yes, well, that study showed so-and-so. The study last year showed something else. The study 5 years ago, showed something else. What you have to do always is look down the tunnel of studies for the last 20, 30 years and see where the zigzag is, where is the line. When you've got a substance which is patented by a government, it's patented by the federal government in the U.S., and you have to pay to be able to use it, then people are always looking for alternatives and looking for ways to knock it. In terms of the research, chromium picolinate is still the best form of chromium that I know.
Oh, that's good to hear. And I see also in your carbohydrate control pack, you've got a couple of other minerals there.
Carbohydrate control. Oh, yes, yes. Well, there will be two things that are fairly short in the diet. One is manganese and the other is boron. Both are simple minerals. Both of them occur in the soil, but they're fairly scant in the diet. Therefore, we think that supplementing with them does help to maintain insulin metabolism. And certainly studies show this, but the usual question is, but don't I get enough in my diet? Well, in fact, the first thing that we do before we put a substance into any vitamin or mineral pack or any sort of pack is find out what are the population studies of the amount of this substance that are in the diet. Because if it's ample, there's no point in putting it in the supplement. If it's not, then there is a reasonable chance that it will help.
So what about people that have carbohydrate addiction? Would your control pack be helpful for them?
Yeah, well, the reasons for addiction, of course, are multiple, and a lot of them are emotional. With devilish cunning and monumental ignorance, the people who design food have extracted all of the tastes, smells, sights, and feels that titivate our inherited palate. And they've taken them from their otherwise nutritious context by which we evolved and put them into non-nutritious contexts. And people will respond to what is genetically programmed into them and eat what is now non-nutritious. It's easy to see where addiction to particular foods comes from. The foods are made as addictive as possible.
Michael, you are as poetic and brilliant as ever. Doesn't age have any effect on you at all?
Not for a while, I hope.
Well, you're busy, right? You're keeping busy.
I'm pretty busy with this project. It's mighty beautiful here. I'm looking out at the lake, and it's just gorgeous. But I think there's one thing, Corey, I know, you know, we've known each other for a long time and sort of grown older together. One last comment I'd like to make, and that is that in trying to evaluate what you should do with your life, you can spend it in sort of mindless recreation, or you can watch TV or something that's equally sort of useless, or you can try and do something that helps the human race a bit. Now, I know that sounds really like a do-gooder, but it's my belief that if we fail to provide the facilities and the training and the knowledge that will enable our children to be better than we are, then our lives are of little value.
Those are powerful words, Michael, and I thank you very much for being my special guest on this anniversary edition of SNU.
Thank you, Corey. Always a pleasure.
And we will see you soon and talk to you very soon, Michael.
Okay.
Thank you very kindly again.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Represent his lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU. Sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight. Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life. Live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see ya changing heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.